Hey Pacers fans, this is TJ Leaf, and you're listening to Pacers Sound.
Valentine and Markin and Leaf, and there's another steal. Oladipo in with a two-hand slam.
Well, it's been a couple weeks, but we welcome you back into the Sideline Guys podcast alongside Jeremiah Johnson. I'm Pat Boylan. Indiana playing well in their last two, dominant in their last two at home after having a struggle without Victor Oladipo. And Jeremiah wanted to make this very clear. We didn't intentionally not do a podcast during this losing streak. We weren't trying to avoid anything. Just the timing with the holidays and all that didn't necessarily lend itself to a good time to do a podcast. That said, now that Indiana's won a couple of two, I think there are a lot of new storylines here to talk about, and especially going through what I thought was one of the more interesting media availabilities of the season here just a couple minutes ago.
Yeah, we can touch on some of the topics discussed, but 40 games into the season, so you've got your natural mid-season point, halfway point articles that will be coming from some of your favorite writers that cover the Pacers. And so we listened to some of those comments and had some fun as well. But to your point about dodging the podcast, I think people know that we're, you know, we lean a little maybe pro Pacers, but we try to be neutral as well. And there was no reason to not do a podcast just because the team was losing. And I don't think there's any reason also to go back and try to figure out what was going on in the last couple of weeks or during the five-game losing streak, because this is not a complete team without Victor Oladipo. And it's crazy to just say that one player can have such an impact. But after watching the last two games at Bankers Life Fieldhouse and then looking ahead, it is amazing to think what one player can kind of change the mood, the outlook, just the vibe around a team. And Victor is back. I think we'll have to monitor his knee maybe a little bit moving forward because he's not practicing fully right now. Nate McMillan told me before the Milwaukee game that he's going to give him some time off in practice just to make sure he's fresh. And I think they can still practice hard without Victor, and you'd rather have him in the game than in practice. But a special guest that we'll bring in to the Sideline Guys podcast right now is Chris Denari. Occasionally we hear from Chris on this podcast. And Chris, as you analyze what you've seen, not just in the last couple of weeks, but maybe just with the last couple of games, what do you think changed?
Well, I think the one thing that's changed is the energy and that Victor Oladipo has brought back to the team. And I think this team is just better with Lance Stephenson coming off the bench. I mean, his numbers as a starter weren't bad, but I think it disrupted the flow that this team has had off the bench. I think the other thing that we've seen is Nate McMillan now appears to be more willing to go deeper into his bench. We've seen extended minutes for Joe Young, six straight games of at least 10 minutes per game. We're starting to see TJ Leaf be reinserted into that bench unit. And so now you have five starters and five bench players. And I think the key thing was on Monday night, all 10 players scored. The bench outscored Milwaukee 24-0 in the first half. And I think one of the issues that had happened is, you guys just talked about it, this is a difficult time of the season. You're getting to the halfway point after the holidays leading up to the All-Star break, and guys are going to get tired. And I think Nate was writing the trio off the bench of Sabonis, Joseph, and Stevenson, and the five starters. I think guys like Bojan Bogdanovic and Thad Young hit a little bit of a wall, ran out of a little bit of a gas. So I think I've been very pleased with Joe Young. He's done a nice job. I mean, his numbers are very solid. He's averaging about 9 points over this stretch, 59% from the field, better than 50% from three. And I think where I see it, his decision-making. I've always questioned his decision-making, whether he's in the game in crunch time or whether he's in the game at the end. I just have never been a big fan of his decision-making in his first two-plus years. I can't say that the last few weeks. I think his decision-making has been solid, and that's given him more of an opportunity to play. And I think when you can spread the wealth around a little bit, and Victor's allowed this team to do it, they're much better.
Yeah, I think the bench is maybe an interesting point and maybe something that's really important for this next half going forward, as we are almost at the halfway point. But it is interesting because Joe Young, who would come in only in garbage time for most of his career, would come in and he would look like a player who was trying to show in those 90 seconds that he could be a 20 points a game kind of guy. And I think it's been interesting to watch his decision making as he's come in, as Chris said, and flow into the offense. And I think he's come in and made that transition kind of seamless. And some of it started by necessity when Oladipo was out, and then Oladipo comes back in. Bojan comes back in, and Nate's saying, well, he's playing well. Leaf is playing well. A longer rotation obviously benefits the team as you look further down the road and just trying to keep guys fresh. And Jeremiah, TJ Leaf as well, somebody we saw, especially against Chicago a couple games ago, play extremely well. But I've been really itching to see him play longer minutes because I know his defense probably is not quite to the level of where they would like for him to play big minutes. But when we've seen him in spurts, I think his offensive game right now is NBA ready. I think he showed that in the G League up in Fort Wayne. And I was really happy to see him come in, play as well as he did against Chicago, and then have a game following up where he maybe didn't put up the big numbers, but I thought gelled with the overall picture of what the bench was trying to do.
TJ will always have confidence in his outside shot. The biggest part I thought of the Chicago game was he fought for a couple of offensive rebounds and extended possessions, and then that just carried over to the rest of his game. And a conversation I had with Dan Burke prior to the win against Chicago was about the state of the team. I mean, at that point, you're entering that game against Chicago with a five-game losing streak, and what was it felt like a must-win game. It's hard to say that in game number 39 of the season, but the Pacers had to win that game. And Dan told me the coaches had been questioning themselves a little bit, wondering if they've been riding their starters too hard, wondering if Bojan Bogdanović was running out of gas just a little bit, the same with Thaddeus Young, and saying, we wonder if we need to play TJ more, because he said, Thaddeus, you needed in some of these close games. There were so many close games there in November and the first part of December that they had to play what they thought was their best unit to get the wins that they needed with Thaddeus, and they left TJ off the bench, and then he got out of the rotation. So I could tell that they were going to try to give TJ another chance, and it's been great to see that he's taken advantage of that opportunity. So since we're talking about bench players, Chris, I think we must segue into maybe the most entertaining player on the team who comes off the bench now that Victor Oladipo is starting. And what did you think when you're calling a Lance Stephenson play and then the reaction to the play? You always see everything that Lance does. The cameras have done a very good job at catching many of them. And Jamie Burns, our director, and Max Leinwand, our producer, and all of the outstanding camera folks do a great job of, I think, kind of keeping an eye on where Lance is at all times. But when you're watching some of those plays, How do you decide what to say?
It was interesting because on the game Monday night, Nate McMillan, and Pat can, I think, vouch for this, Nate tends to stand in front of us a lot. And so on the play that he made the behind-the-back pass, I did not see the behind-the-back pass because I was looking live and Nate was right in my way. I knew somehow the ball had gotten to TJ, and I knew it was probably something dramatic because I heard the oohs and the ahs of the crowd. But that was a play that Lance completed that was neat and those types of things.
Neat.
I thought the pass he made to Domas was almost as impressive. It was a bullet pass. Domas missed it, and then Lance goes falling to the floor. I didn't know if the three-point line got him or whatever, if he tripped. But I know, and you guys are going to talk about it, I know – you know, while you want these guys to play with a lot of energy and fun and excitement and youthfulness and exuberance, I'm using all these kinds of adjectives, I know there's a concern about what that says to the other team, and I think Nate McMillan at times is a little concerned about that.
Yeah, so let's play some of this really quickly. Let's hear from Lance Stephenson at practice here today, and then we'll hear from Nate McMillan.
Nate actually don't like it, but... But I just try my best to channel it, but we having so much fun, and I feel like when we showing how hard we working on the defensive end, I feel like he give us a chance, so you can do that a little bit.
Do you ever intentionally not look at him?
Yeah, I try not to look at him, especially when if I do a dumb foul or do something that get his attention, I try to look the other way. But he'd be like this, looking for me, like, where you at? I know you see me. But I love it, man. Sometimes you need that channel to calm me down a little bit, and Nate definitely do that for me.
I just put on my notes, why? Why? And, and I asked him in the room today, and he didn't have an answer for it. It was just, throw the pass, roll on the floor, and realize that they're coming at you in transition. You know, so, yeah.
You hear Lance say these things, and it's almost funnier if you could see them, and the video is up online, and I'm sure it'll be part of the television show at some point as well. Lance's reaction to this is interesting because he knows that Nate wants him to maybe bring it down a notch on some of the theatrics. But that's also part of what makes Lance Lance. And Nate talked about that as well. You don't want him showing up the opponent. You want him to respect the game is something that Nate says a lot. And I think a lot of that's important. I really don't think that whatever he did that Chris was referencing, the three-point line getting him, let's call it, was necessary. But at
and Quinn
same
said
point,
during the broadcast he thought maybe he was trying to flop and get a foul. There was
no. Maybe, but I mean, he's dreaming if he's thinking he's getting that. But that's part of what makes Lance Lance, and there's a balance there because if he just played like a normal player plays, for lack of a better term, I'm not sure he's quite as effective. So there's a balance there that he's always trying to find, that Nate's trying to find. And Nate made the funny comment as well that he wrote down in the notes as they were watching the game. He wrote down just the word why.
And I believe I'll answer that because I do think that Lance, it's going to be difficult for Lance to figure out where that line is and when to not cross it. But we had a segment on Pacers Live pregame before Christmas, and it was a Christmas wish list. And one of the things that I came up with that I wanted was more good Lance moments at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, because the energy he brought the team last season, the last six games, that put him in the playoffs. The energy that he's provided this season, he is maybe the seventh or eighth leading scorer on the team right now. So you cannot say he is the reason the Pacers are successful, but some of the things that he has done has energized this crowd and I think has played a big part in getting fans excited about the Pacers once again. So I talked with Quinn Buckner during practice today, and we were just chatting it up a little bit, and obviously we started talking about Lance, and I said I think you need one good Lance play a game, preferably probably in the first half, just to get the crowd into the game, make them feel like they've experienced everything there is to see with the Pacers. And he kind of laughed at me, and if Quinn tells me I'm crazy and it's a basketball-related topic, I'm going to agree with him. But then I said, and I'm not talking about the pass to Domas and falling on the ground. That's not what I mean.
Yeah.
But the play to TJ that is finished and probably, you know, plays that he makes leads to timeouts from the other team. Anytime you make a play and it causes the other team to have to call a timeout, I think you're making a momentum type of play and a positive impact. And during the five-game losing streak, I could be wrong, and maybe there was a exciting moment that I'm forgetting in the Dallas game, but that was really the only game that had any, you know, positivity. But I don't remember any good Lance moments and energy moments in the field house. You had away games there as well, but I don't remember them in the five-game losing streak. But if you go backwards, you could almost think of a play, one play maybe in most of those home games where Lance made something happen and the crowd went crazy and the players love it as well. And I don't think Nate has a problem with some of those plays. It's just not crossing the line.
I'll agree with that. All you have to know is when you hear the starting lineup and you hear Victor Oladipo, I mean, the crowd responds to Victor, and then when Lance checks in each and every night, I mean, it's almost like a standing ovation. I said this last year. I thought that the response to Lance coming back in his first home game against Toronto last year might have been more of a response than when Paul George came back from his leg injury, a year or two prior. So I'm in total agreement. I mean, plays like Lance made with the pass to TJ gives the building an energy that we just haven't felt in some time. So I think Lance has to be a little diplomatic. He has to do those kinds of things, but there is a line there that I think, as you know, Nate's just worried about how does it affect the other team? How do they respond coming out of the timeout? You don't want to take the fun away. No question about that. We don't want this to be the no fun league. But at the same time, you know, Lance has got to be careful. We saw what happened last year in the Toronto game, you know, when he went down and made the layup and it caught the ire of now his teammate Corey Joseph and DeMar DeRozan. But I love the energy he brings. I mean, it is a different field house this year because of this team, because of Victor, and because of Lance.
On a similar topic, but a completely different angle of it, Victor Oladipo kind of has a lot of these attributes in terms of ways to get the crowd pumped up, ways to get the team pumped up. Very, very different from how Lance goes out about them. But his moment last night, which went from shock to scare to, I think everybody went through like the five stages in about 30 to 40 seconds. But I was, as he fought, what I'm talking about, the play, he drives to the rim, he falls, and there was a thud. I mean, I know you could feel it because I could feel. You could feel that court vibrate, and we are on the other end of the floor from where that happened. And Nate, Chris, I don't know if you caught it, but he actually turned around and kind of gave a grimace and didn't even want to look at it. And you could tell for just a few seconds, you could see what was running through his brain. Uh-oh, I hope this isn't significant to a player that is so vital to us. And then we couldn't, maybe you could have because you had the TV monitor at the time, but I didn't notice it immediately. But he kind of sits there, he's down on the ground, and then he kind of does, it's almost like a, like squints in where when he's gets pretending to be drowned in Wendy Peppercorn or whatever is.
I told him in the locker room when he looked up at the camera, I knew he was all right.
Yeah.
I mean, I really did. I mean, it was that moment when he just sort of looked up and had like the sheepish grin. I go, he's fine.
You get that smile from squints. It was, and he said he didn't know where the camera was, but I'm not so sure about that. He is so, he's so cerebral because he knows the right time where he feels like he can do the finger pointing down, this is my city. And he seems to have very much awareness of things that aren't just on the floor. And he's laying down there and everybody's seen it. And he kind of looks up and gives that little smile and shakes his head. And I think at that point, everybody on TV knew that he was all right. And then, of course, he ends up being just fine. And it's amazing how something so simple as that, and again, this is, I think Fox Sports Indiana deserves a lot of credit for this, because if they don't, if Jamie's not on that camera, if that camera guy's not right tight in on his face, none of this really blows up in the way it has. But the meme right now of the Twitter sphere is Victor Oladipo doing that, and it's funny to watch how that has come together so quickly. But he laughed about it at practice as well, and just kind of said, you know, it's amazing. He got tons of texts and tons of tweets about it, but he kind of has another way of engaging the crowd and bringing outside aspects to help the team, sort of like Lance does, just in a very different way of doing it.
I think it can be very difficult to be in the team building process and try to figure out what parts will go together, but I think these guys have, there's something about them. They have an energy. They have just a personality that I think the fans are attaching onto. And it's not all of them. I mean, they're not all like Lance. And you couldn't have a whole team with guys like Lance and even like Victor. I mean, Victor has a different kind of personality than Lance, but it's an infectious personality, and it's also a very positive personality. And just one final thought on the injury. He went to the bench, and during the commercial break, producer Max Linewan said, try to let us know when you find something out. We got to do an injury update. And I said, well, there doesn't appear to be much concern in the huddle right now. Josh Corbeil went over to him and talked to him for literally 5 seconds and walked away. And then the discussion turned to what play they were going to run out of the timeout. So that was the positive from an injury news. And you hate to have injuries happen, especially what you saw in the fourth quarter when Domas goes down. But the good news now, I think Victor is no worse for the wear, at least in terms of that. His knee soreness, you know, it could be something moving forward, but he's still fine for Miami, not listed on the injury report. Domas Sabonis went through a full practice. His wrist is fine, but now Miles Turner is listed as doubtful. And with what we saw, him shooting after practice with his left hand and not really doing anything, not even shaking hands with his right arm, he does have elbow soreness, Chris, that it doesn't, you know, doubtful is meaning he probably will not play against Miami.
Yeah, he did. He did it when he had the sort of monster dunk in the first half. And, you know, Mr. Positive that I am, I sort of look at it, though, at least he's doubtful and not out. So I don't expect him to play against Miami. But I think the good news is if I saw he was out, then I'd have even more concern. Now, will he miss some time? More than a game? Quite possibly. But to me, that news is good that on the day before the game, they have not automatically listed him out. So I'll tend to look at that it's sort of a day-to-day situation with Miles as far as that elbow is concerned.
No, I think that's a good point. And he also made the comment after practice that he kind of was joking when he said this, but he smiled and kind of said the dunk was almost worth it, meaning at least to me, and maybe I read too much into something like that, but I don't think if he felt like it was really going to hinder him for long term, that he would have joked about that or even made that comment. So yeah, if he was, because remember the Oladipo scenario, they were calling Oladipo out a couple of days even before some of those games. So this seems different. We don't know, and sometimes injuries like that can tend to linger, and you certainly hope that's not the case for Miles, especially because I think Miles has been playing a lot better the last couple of games, and it's frustrating because I think he had kind of started to find a little bit of his groove and the formula for what makes him successful and how he can be successful. But we will obviously keep you up to date on that through our other channels of communication that we have. So you want to take a look here, Jeremiah, at some Twitter questions? I know we got a few.
Yeah, we got a few, and you just put it out about an hour ago as we are taping this on Tuesday afternoon. We'll go right to one of our Corner 3 show buddies, Alexander Mack. Before I ask this question, I'm looking for a little more Corner 3 show podcasts. I'm getting ready to hit the road next week and haven't seen as much out of them, so it's a challenge. Let's get some new material out, guys. But Alexander Mack says, how will GR3's return affect the rotation? Do we feel that TJ is close to having it all click? And Chris, we saw Glenn after practice again today going through some things, and I think Nate even referenced that he's trying to shake some of the rust off. Still no timetable, but I've seen him do more and more in practice to where it used to just be some shooting drills and some drills after practice. I've seen him do more during practice. I'm not ready to say a date yet, and Nate isn't either, but it does appear there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, he looks a lot better. I mean, he doesn't have it. If you go back a few weeks when you'd see him out there working with the video guys who double as extra people to work out after practice, Ben Eblin and has done a lot of work with him. David McClure, of course, in player development. He is losing that hitch. He still had a little bit of a, if you call it a limp or a hitch, because you're not totally comfortable about what you can do off that leg or that ankle. And I see that most of that has gone away. He's still, you know, he's nowhere near 100%, and I think they'd like him to be closer to 100%. And I think the way this team has performed, it's going to be a bonus when you get him back. It will definitely be a help to the rotation and give you some depth. But I think they're going to still be very cautious with that to make sure that he's really ready to go once they're able to pencil him into the lineup.
Another guy who seems to be getting closer, and we don't know what his role is going to be, even if there is one, if he is fully healthy, is Edmund Sumner. And he was doing some of those same workouts that Chris was talking about with Glenn Robinson. He was doing some of those right after Glenn. So these are two guys that have been out, and we have seen just kind of sitting around, and they've had to sit around because of injury for a good chunk of this season. So just from an aspect of seeing them run up and down the court, shoot, play in, you know, kind of simulated games, I think that's a good sign for both of them.
And with Glenn, I think when he's available and when the trainers give Nate McMillan the green light that Glenn can play, my anticipation would be you'd be at an 8 to 12 minutes per game. You'd play him for maybe a 4 or 5 minute spurt in the first half. But he is the backup three at this point. You know, Damian Wilkins, we should at least give a shout out to Damian for what he did for this franchise and for the players on this team. And I, in just 4 months, I really got to know Damian and really appreciated being around him. But he was kind of your backup three when you needed a true backup wing, and he's not here. So if Glenn comes back, he becomes the backup wing. And then if Boyan ever gets hurt, he could go into the starting lineup. But I think that he gets to play right away and he moves into the rotation. And TJ, I think, is close to having it all click. And I think that I would be surprised if he falls out of the rotation based on what we've seen over the last two games. I think there's some concern on Domas Sabonis with it being his left wrist, and some people, Tyler Freeman, has asked if it's similar to what Thad, when Thad hurt his left wrist last season, it affected his shooting. I guess I would say Thad definitely was injured, and Domas, it appears, although he thought when it happened he was injured, it's just not an injury, and I don't think it's anything to be concerned about.
No, I totally agree. I think, you know, when you talk about an athlete, there is hurt and injured. And I would say Domas got hurt last night, and he's not injured. I talked to him after practice, and Quinn and I were both sitting there and said, boy, you have some good genes when you think about Arvydas Sabonis, because this guy is tough. And he was shooting. He had no ice on his wrist. He had nothing. When I walked out there to practice and watched him doing that, I felt really good. So I think the key word is he's not injured. He's not even listed on the injury report. So that's a good sign, and it didn't affect what he was doing. I mean, what this guy has done, three straight games of 17 or more points. He had 24 in the loss at Milwaukee, 22 more against Chicago, and 17 last night in a double-double. So I mean, this kid at 21 years old has been simply amazing, and I can't wait to watch him the rest of the year, but what he's going to do in a Pacers uniform over his career.
Yeah, I went into the locker room last night, and that was, of course, one of the primary objectives I wanted to do, was to try to figure out the status of his wrist, and he walked in and was, you know, getting changed and all that stuff and didn't appear to be hindered. But what really solidified it for me, he was standing there before his media availability and he had his hands kind of behind his back and he was almost like kind of unintentionally rocking on his left wrist into that wall behind him. And I figured, you know, if that wrist hurt at all, he would not be doing any sort of motion like that. And it was sort of a subconscious movement that he was making, but something that if his wrist consciously hurt, he certainly wouldn't be doing. One more question here from Q Pat, how hard does Oladipo push this team in practice? Because I know he has to do it more than just in game.
I don't know that some would question or ask whether Victor is kind of the vocal leader or the leader on the court. And I think he's probably more vocal than people think, but I'm not sure it's during every drill in practice. And I think practice is one of those things that Nate McMillan is kind of the voice in practice, and he pushes the team. And I think that's what you want. But I think Victor's presence out there, and now we're seeing him practice less, even though with that knee issue, he referenced last week how those were training camp style practices, but I don't think he did every drill. So I think you've got to pick and choose your moments, and you can't every drill get on guys. And I think Vic does a pretty good job in huddles, even when he's not in the game. Even last night against Milwaukee, he was saying, take it to another level when the lead was 25. So he's kind of pushing them. I think it's just the way he practices, then it's more of leading by example.
No question about that, and I'll go back to the locker room last night. It was just neat to see him. He was singing. He had his little speaker as he was going to the shower. And today, as he was leaving the practice court to come over and do the interviews with all you guys, he was singing Hi-Ho, Hi-Ho from Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. That's what he was singing today. And Quinn and I were just sitting there laughing. And I mean, we know this guy has a great voice. I've never heard Hi-Ho, Hi-Ho sang so well. You know, this guy is here's what I was thinking. This guy is a combination Neo, Justin Timberlake, and whatever athlete you want to talk in a combination. I mean, this guy has so much talent that
Michael
Jordan couldn't sing.
And
you're combining that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm telling you,
some of the moves he makes on the court and in that Bulls game, was he not going to go up and do that Michael
right.
Jordan?
Yeah.
He just kind of lost control of the ball. And I'll give credit to my dad. I mean, he said in November, some of the facial expressions that he makes, he did the shoulder shrug after one of those three-pointers. I mean, we're not saying Victor is Michael Jordan, but it is pretty cool the way he carries himself and the way everyone else plays around him from the on-court part. Sometimes I do find myself wondering, is this guy real?
I'm glad he's here. That's the one thing I say.
One final thought on that point. He was asked today about Domas Sabonis and how well Domas is playing, and he said something he's said quite frequently about, you know, I think I told Domas that we're attached forever because you were drafted and traded with me, and then you were traded with me to the Pacers, so we're together for the rest of our career, to which I said, I think Pacers fans would be okay if both of you are here for the rest of your career. And he laughed and he said, I'd be okay with that too. I mean, no more than anything else that's happening, I think Pacers fans love the fact of how much Victor loves being here.
He one time early in the season was in the locker room and he was playing this song out of his phone as he's walking back from the shower. And he told all the reporters he'd pay $100 if anyone could guess name what movie the song came from. And John LaFollette is in there. And John LaFollette, who is one of the two Miller Time podcast guys, has incredible pop culture knowledge. And I said, there's a chance John might get this. I am very poor with pop culture knowledge. So I let him guess away, and he guessed a couple of things. And Victor, no, not even close. And it ended up being a song from the Goofy movie.
Well, that's what he said when he was talking about Home Alone was, yeah. I said, you watch it just during Thanksgiving to Christmas? He said, no, bro, every night. And then I said, really? And then he said, that or the Goofy movie? And then it was, what's the other one? There's two Goofy movies, though. My pop culture is going to go away as well.
You're at my limit on goofy pop culture.
Okay.
But yeah, we had one final question. It's not really a question. It's a comment. Georgia blew a 13-0 lead. That's going to be the new the new thing you see on Twitter responding to everything. Not,
Georgia and the Falcons.
Yeah, not Georgia.
Georgia and the Falcons.
Yeah.
Not a good last year for the state of Georgia in football.
I kept thinking as that was happening last night, there have to be a lot of people who are Falcons and Georgia football fans, and whew. We send our thoughts that way because that is so
but
difficult.
But you also won the Rose Bowl in overtime, and you got to the Super Bowl. I know, it's difficult.
But that would have to be tough to have two championships to feel like you've got them within 11 months. Okay, let's look at our pick three, where we are going to put no money down on these three choices, even though they have horse racing origins. And our pick three this week, and it works well, we have three people, so you and I don't have a joint pick this week. Surprise teams, and this can be either positive or negative, and we are by the next time we tape a podcast, we will be past the halfway point of the season. We are right up against it right now as we are taping this here today. So surprise teams, positively or negatively, in the NBA as we stand at about the midway point.
And we are excluding the Pacers, but this is the reason that I thought of this topic was I saw some folks on Twitter ask the question, who's a surprise team in the NBA? And these were national writers. And I saw the first five people respond that I don't think were Pacer fans, all of them say the Pacers, they're the surprise team. And so you look at the standings and, you know, I think it's hard because we've been so close to the team and you see the Pacers at 21-19 and you still remember that five-game losing streak. So you're hesitant to say for sure it's a surprise or a super success at this point, but I think you do need to understand the Pacers are a pleasant surprise, especially how they are viewed outside of Indiana. But I'm going to go right to the top. I think Boston at 33-10, they played a very compact schedule in the first half of the season because they are in London this week, so they played more games than anyone right now. They've already played 43. They lost Gordon Hayward on opening night, and they do it with guys that you just don't always expect. I mean, Terry Rozier is turning into a star, and every night it seems like Brad Stevens puts somebody on the floor and they make an impact. And so to see them at 33-10, and Toronto has the same number of losses, but they've played five less games. So I think Toronto's a little bit of a surprise as well. But I don't know that when you saw Gordon go down that you thought they would just run away with the Eastern Conference. I still thought they'd be 1, 2, or 3. But the way they've done it in a difficult schedule, and we've seen them firsthand twice, and they've beaten the Pacers here at Bankers Life Fieldhouse at times. You know, Victor didn't play one of those games. But that second one, the Pacers kind of had things rolling a little bit, and Boston still got that win. So I'm going to go Boston as my surprise team.
I like that on Boston. When you consider that Brad Stevens is winning a multitude of games with guys off the bench, Shane Larkin, Shemi Ojeleye, and Daniel Tice, I think if you went out on the street and talked to NBA fans, they wouldn't know any of those three, and yet they're winning games. I'm, however, going to talk about the Minnesota Timberwolves. We've seen them twice without Jimmy Butler and with Jimmy Butler and with Jimmy Butler and without Victor Oladipo. That was not a good night at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. But they're 10 games over 500, coming off a blowout win over Cleveland. They are going to break the streak of 13 straight years outside the playoffs. This is a very good team. They were expected to do better last year with Tom Thibodeau in year one and with the young talent of Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns. But clearly, I think the additions of Jimmy Butler and especially Taj Gibson have really taken this team to another level. So I like the Minnesota Timberwolves.
And I'm a little bit surprised that they're doing as well as they are this quickly, because I thought this would be a team that for the first half would kind of bounce around 500 and then start to figure it out. As you mentioned, a team that even with the star power of Towns and Wiggins had really struggled and had been picking near the top for the last handful of years. I'm going to go the negative side of this, and I'm going to go the Lakers, because I don't think there's any reason for the Lakers to be worse this year. And maybe they won't, but right now they do seem worse this year a little bit than last year. They have the worst record in the conference now. Lonzo Ball, I think everybody has an opinion on him. I tend to fall somewhere in the middle in that, you know, he's a rookie averaging 7 assists per game. He actually leads the team in rebounds. I just noticed that, and that is probably not a good sign and probably part of the reason why they're struggling, because their point guard leads the team in rebounds and not Julius Randle or Brooke Lopez. But they've gotten great play from Kyle Kuzma. Kyle Kuzma is arguably their best player. They brought in Brooke Lopez in the offseason. And this team right now, and remember, Boston gets their pick if it's 2-5. So they have no incentive to lose. And yet they are at the very bottom of the NBA. And, of course, everybody in Lakerland almost seems to just want to forget the play on the court and play in this mythical offseason that we'll see if they have a role in or not coming up. But I'm surprised that the Lakers aren't taking steps forward, because I kind of, what I expected from them, and we'll see where this team goes as well because they've been injured, but I kind of expected a Nets-level jump from them this year, and that they're going to go from, like, the basement to, like, the first floor. They're still going to be out of the playoffs. They're not going to contend, but they're going to get out of picking. They picked third two or three straight years. So I'm surprised the Lakers have been so poor, especially when you consider Lonzo's really struggled with his shot, but has been at least a guy that has created for others. Ingram seems to be having a better season. Kuzma's been fantastic, all things considered. Lopez has been, you know, all right, but a player that I thought was a good move for them, and yet they seem to be no better, and if not, at least so far, to have taken a half step back.
So here's my question. Second half of the season, the NBA flexes out TNT games or ABC games, maybe even ESPN games if teams are not good draws. Does the league treat the Lakers like their record, or do they continue to be on my TV every single night there's a primetime, or what is a West Coast late game? Because I'm personally sick of 10 o'clock, the kids go to bed, and, okay, I wonder what's going to be on the ESPN or the TNT game tonight, and it's the Lakers.
Ratings guru is probably a good person to take.
Well, I think one of the problems is I just was on Twitter here as we're taping this and going through Twitter, and the Big Baller Brand, over 100,000 people are watching the Ball Brothers play in Lithuania. 100,000 people are watching online. So to me, that's all that has to tell you, that they're going to continue to watch Lonzo Ball and Ball Mania.
You like to watch random sporting events. You told us over the weekend you were tuned into Detroit Mercy basketball. Would you be watching Lithuania hoops?
No, I am not watching Lithuania hoops. And I mean, the only reason I was watching it is because it was on my Twitter feed. I mean,
did you see that clip? Surely they weren't going at full speed, but that clip that who's over there? Jeff Goodman. He posted a clip that looked like you could go to the Y right now, or you could go to our own Pacers League and find better play.
Ken Soffman, our Pacers Live pregame producer, went to, was it Italy last summer? And he played in a semi-pro league. I said, wait a second, you played semi-pro basketball over there? Like, you're not a basketball player. He's like, I know, but they loved me. I was great. So I think this is probably a step up from that. But,
I think you and I have kind of an unwritten rule of not delving too much into LeVar Ball on this podcast. However, I did see a pretty funny tweet, and I can't remember where it came from, but somebody tweeted, I keep waiting for DeMontis's dad to weigh in, because isn't he 1,000 times more qualified to comment on anything? And clearly they were joking. But that, I thought that was kind of funny, because you've got this guy who essentially did nothing at any level of high-level basketball. Why is he getting all this attention? And then you've got a guy like Arvydas Sabonis, who's one of the best basketball players of his time, and yet he can stay quiet and understand his role in all of that, which is to let your son be your son and let the team be the team and not make the storyline. I mean, look, it's unbelievable what it's blown into. Stan Van Gundy's talking about it. Steve Kerr's talking about it. I don't know if Popovich has hit on it.
I just wish they would say who. I mean, I do like what Steve Kerr had to say about it, and I thought Rick Carlisle's message was – you know, I understand what he was saying, but I don't think the execution was what I would agree with.
I thought Kerr has had the most well thought out and correct.
And the Kardashian thing, I mean, I've been saying that for a while, and I'm probably not the first person, but they are just celebrities for being celebrities. But I do remember back to one of the, and we'll definitely, we spent more Laker time than I planned. So I've referenced these off-season Q&As that Kevin Pritchard had with season ticket holders at different points in time. And I can distinctly remember one of the times where someone, you know, when the floor is open, anyone can ask a question, and Kevin Pritchard was pretty open and honest in these situations. And I can remember someone saying, if you would have had the opportunity, would you ever have drafted Lonzo Ball? He just said, no, he's not our kind of.
Yeah.
And I think it was everything about it. I mean, I think teams factor that in. And so if you are a free agent now, and I think this is what would get interesting, you know, does the spectacle and the circus and the nonsense factor into your decision of going there?
And I think you would have to look at how not just him, but most GMs have to look at this and say, look, the kid clearly is talented. And the irony of all of this is Lonzo seems to be the exact opposite of that. And so you kind of feel for him in some ways because there are people rooting against him for no other reason than something that is not directly tied to his play and his attitude. But it does kind of feel like we're starting to get at a bit of a fork in the road here with this. How is this going to go?
I thought we were done until the Lithuania thing happened.
And it can't be like this for 15 years. If Lonzo's a good pro, if LiAngelo's a good pro, like it just can't. It's going to be exhausting. Yeah, I'm not really sure how we got down that rabbit hole. I think it was because I picked the
Lakers. You were surprised the Lakers are bad. Yeah. I'm not surprised.
Right. So, I'm surprised the Lakers are this bad. I'm not surprised they're struggling. I'm not surprised they're under 500. I'm surprised that they have the second worst record in the NBA. That's our pick three.
All right. With a little anything else you'd like comment. To get to? I think we've had a pretty good time on this podcast. What, 40 minutes or so?
I have no idea how long. I normally look at the clock and totally forgot to look. So we could be, I'm like a dog.
Time
when you
flies.
Leave it at home. I don't know if you've been gone for 10 minutes or 10 hours. But quickly, Miami coming up, Cleveland coming up. Miami's playing extremely well. They're a surprise, I think. Maybe I should have picked the Heat because they've really turned it around here lately, although they're a little banged up. Cleveland, Indiana's going to get a chance to, an opportunity to win the season series with Cleveland here on Friday, which is obviously a huge opportunity.
And what a break for the schedule for the Pacers. And I know that if I had to rank a top three in most difficult places to win, Toronto's on that list. And so for Miami coming to Bankers Live Fieldhouse on Wednesday after playing at Toronto on Tuesday, and then the Cavs coming to Indianapolis after playing at Toronto on Thursday. As far as back-to-backs go, I mean, it just the game itself, the home court atmosphere and the disadvantage guests have, the advantage the Raptors have, it's second to none, I think. And then to have a back-to-back where you've got to go through customs and you just get in late, I mean, it's a scheduling advantage this week that the Pacers really need to take advantage of. And if you can win these two games and you can't look past either one of them, and you could lose either one of them as well. But if you go to that road trip with a four-game win streak and then you're facing Phoenix and Utah, I mean, you have a chance to get, you know, all of that momentum you lost. It could be back and then some.
Yeah, as I look at the schedule, I kind of look at, you know, what would be, I think, a positive result in stretches of play. It's just kind of how my brain works. And I looked at these four games and said, if you can go 3-1, I think that would be a really good result for them. And it would give you a little bit of a buffer as you hit a West Coast trip, which is always difficult, regardless of the fact that, you know, Phoenix is on there, a couple bad teams are on there, Utah's really been struggling. Their road games, you're on the road for a long time, it's going to be difficult. So if they can get to 3-1 or even 4-0 on this trip, I think it gives you a little bit of leeway for that road trip, which is going to be tough, but there are very winnable games on there as well. And I think the Pacers, I think we've just been conditioned, especially last year, the team struggled so much on the road. Maybe I should stop making such a big deal of road games, just because last year it was always like, okay, they got to make up all this ground at home because we know what the road's going to be. And maybe that's not a fair stance. Maybe the correct stance would be this is a team that, you know, maybe is not going to be the dominant home team that last year's was, but they're going to play well at home and they're going to be competitive on the road. And I think that if that is the case, I think that general level of consistency is much healthier for a team over the course of a year.
So after a one-week vacation from the podcast, it was good to get back in the swing of things. Good to see the Pacers kind of getting back to their winning ways. And I think mojo was a term that you guys used on the broadcast. Chris and Quinn did. And I think maybe even Mark Boyle's used it as well, momentum. So the Pacers are playing well. Chris, thanks for stopping by the Sideline Guys podcast.
All right, thanks, JJ. And I think it is mojo. I think I heard Mark Boyle use the word. They play with a lot of verve. So I like that.
That was the word. For Chris Denary, Jeremiah Johnson, I'm Pat Boylan. We'll talk to you next week on the Sideline Guys podcast.